Now to a different kind of community journalism. Stilgerian's a freelancer who covers technology, security and privacy. He writes for quite a few outlets and does his own podcast. He's been on the show before. Today and this weekend, he's in Melbourne covering two different but related hacker conferences. But when he first thought of going, he knew that the editors he usually works with wouldn't be coming up with a travel budget. So he decided to ask his readers and listeners if they would pay.
I've been toying around with different ways that I might use crowdfunding to support some independent journalism of mine. That sounds very grand, but really it's just, you know, to pay the bills. And this was then a perfect peg to hang it on. It's a clear project with a clear duration, which means it's something very easy to explain to people. When it went from there, I thought, well, what are they actually going to get for their money? Once I've covered the basic cost of getting to Melbourne and some nights in a hotel, well, there I am. I can pitch stories to editors as I normally would. If something newsworthy happens, I'll be straight on the phone to an editor and say, hey, do you want 400 words on this?
Mm-hmm.
But then if the public is also paying for stories, I thought, well, why shouldn't the public have those stories? So what's going to happen is that for every bunch of dollars past that initial target, that goes into what I'm just calling the production pool. And I'll say, right, I'll charge you guys the same word rate that I'd charge a commercial editor for making a podcast. This is roughly in line with the union rates for a person to do podcasts for a day. What would you like me to do? So I've then opened up a blog post saying, well, here are your options.
Don't you have a kind of Chinese walls problem? Like within an investment bank, only much less money involved. You've got clients, you're hoping that editors who you work with all the time will say, still, I'd love 500 or this or 1,000 on that or whatever. Aren't they going to have concerns if they start seeing your stuff going up for free?
Look, no, because what they're getting if they pay dollars directly to me is they get the exclusivity. They get to shape the story the way they want it for their masthead, whereas if they take what's on the wire, if you like, it's what's on the wire. That's what they get,
and anyone can use it. I guess you'll be dealing with the paying clients first and foremost, as it were, and then the supporters, that's what they're called, aren't they?
Yes, supporters.
Their stuff will come later.
That has actually turned out to be the case in the timeframes. Now, quite frankly, they're the ones who've already put money up front, so they're actually going to get priority service.
So are you saying that the supporters get to say what you should do given the options before you're on the phone to regular publishers of yours?
Well, that would have been my plan, yes. But what's actually turning out in practice is that the supporters are saying, no, 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 I'm sure there will be other people doing the daily news cycle. What we appreciate is that you do take the time to reflect, to pull the threads together, weave them into a narrative. So the consensus that seems to be emerging as I start this process is that, no, they want me to actually write the stuff for them later. But right, I gave them the option first because they put their money where their mouth is first.
All right. Let's go back a step or two. This is funded through the crowdsourcing. And this is about creativity, this crowdsourcing place. This is Possible?
Possible, yes.
How does it work?
People may have heard of Kickstarter, which is the big American one. Possible is similar, Australian owned and run. And in fact, I chose Possible mostly because they will be able to pay directly into my Australian bank account, which is something that Kickstarter has only introduced in the last few days. But when I thought about this a couple of weeks ago, that wasn't really an option. So it works the same way. You explain what your project's about. You set a baseline target. And if you reach that target, then everyone's credit card is charged. If you don't reach the target, you get nothing because that's what you needed for the project to happen at all.
Right.
And for each person who is a supporter, you set levels of rewards.
We'll get onto the rewards, but you set a target of $1,800.
$1,800, yes.
And you got $4,000.
Yes. So there's $2,000 into the production pot, and it's no secret that the standard word rate in the technology press in Australia is 50 cents a word. So that's 4,000 words written or four episodes of a half-hour podcast. And it's looking like we'll do an even split of them. So a couple of podcasts and either two 2,000-word stories or four 500-word stories or something.
Now, you mentioned the rewards, and there are different
there's a sort of structure, isn't there? If I give you $5, you're like, well, thanks very much. But if I give you $350, there's a lot more gratitude.
Oh, yes. Look, it's quite open to anyone setting up a project like this, how they structure it. But I went from, the individuals who will get, if they go over a certain amount, over $15, they get a copy of an ebook which has all of the material gathered into an ebook,
including the stuff that's published commercially.
I have to negotiate that, right, but I don't see why not, because, again, as a freelancer, you generally hold on to the copyright in the material as long as you, don't sell the same material to a directly competing masthead.
All right, so $15, you get the ebook.
Yep. And then up from there, $30, I'll send you a postcard from Melbourne. And
Dear Richard, in Melbourne, having a great time, love
yeah,
still.
Yeah, why not? And I thought that's just a nice little thing. And then as it goes up from there, for the people I'm calling the special contributors, which is $150 or more.
And some people have done this, haven't they? They've kicked in that much.
I will say that there is an anonymous donation from a retired chap in the country who enjoys reading my stuff who gave me $500.
God bless you, sir, whoever you are, yes. Essentially. That's your position.
Exactly. So the special individual supporters get a limited edition ebook just for them with all of the photographs I take, some behind-the-scenes stuff, and I'll actually kind of individually number them. I haven't quite worked out how I'll do that in the digital realm, but I'm sure some of the hackers will explain that to me.
And for the people who pay the most, you're prepared to give them sponsorship of the podcast?
Yes, I did offer a couple of commercial brackets as well. So I did get one commercial sponsor in paying $500 to sponsor a podcast episode.
I would be very surprised if for most of them, these rewards are the actual motivation.
I would agree with that, absolutely. And they say so. They're given the option of, let's say they throw in $150, they're given the option of saying, well, actually, I just want a $15 reward. Right. And the rest is add-on. So I certainly have had people say, no, I'm giving you all of this and I want no reward.
So this is the first time you've done this.
Yes.
It's not going to be the last, though, is it, if it works out?
Absolutely not. Look, this has been fantastic. So the question mark is, how long will the novelty factor last and can it be turned into a sustainable model? Now, the first test will actually come in just a few weeks' time because in early November there's another hacker conference in New Zealand.
More money, international airfare.
Yes. Although, interestingly enough, that might work better because given that it is in New Zealand, it's a place where there is even less likelihood of journalists being able to go there from around the place. Mm. And so maybe the exclusivity will work there too. I'm going to try and flip it into a subscription-based model. Something along the lines of community broadcasting, because it so happens that Possible is about to launch a subscription model. So instead of drumming up all your support for a one-off payment, so you drum up support for people to sign on for a regular monthly deduction from their credit card.
That's different, isn't it? Because you're moving then from essentially funding your journalism on a project-by-project basis to funding your journalism on a personal brand basis.
Yes.
Hasn't been done too often.
It hasn't. It'll be an interesting test. I think part of the success in my case is because I do have a reasonably well-established personal brand and I'm also covering quite a clear niche. I mean, the information security and privacy niche is a very clear community of interest,
yes.
And B, is something that's climbing into mainstream news at the moment too. I mean, all of the Edward Snowden revelations over the course of the last year, not even a year, it's only a few months. What am I saying? It has revolutionized society's view of the internet and how organizations happen. So it's, by chance, a very fortuitous place to be.
It actually only works, if it's going to work, and we'll have to see, for somebody like you. You don't have a subdued personality.
That's the politest way that's ever been put, Richard.
You're in a niche that requires a degree of expertise to actually report on with any sense and adding value to the reader.
Of any credibility.
Yes. And you've been around doing it long enough for people to know who you are. This is not something for people who are trying to break into journalism.
No, and maybe it will be one day. Look, I don't know. It depends on how the model can be built up. It depends really on establishing your fan base, your audience, the people who will be willing to hand over money for something that they're sharing with other people. But I mentioned community broadcasting before. It's exactly the same model. It is, hey guys, would you like this thing to be done? Well, give us money. And I've actually managed a community broadcasting station for a year. So, and I started my media career in community broadcasting before moving to the ABC back sometime last century. And so the model is to me remarkably familiar.
Worth keeping an eye on to see how he goes. That's it from us. The media report's produced by Kyla Slaven. Our sound engineer is Luke Purse. I'm Richard Adie.